11 minutes past 8 o'clock. It's 67 degrees. This is Metro Talk. And here we are with our first Sunday political debate, as we normally do. We've been doing this for the last 200 years of discussion. With us this morning, our debate crew, and they're here to talk about the various issues that we're all very concerned with. This is being election year. Definitely these first Sunday debates are extremely important because at least it clears my head as to which way we should go and which way the country is going. Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian, good morning.
Good morning, Jerry.
Jim Pomeli, Republican, good morning.
Good morning.
Patrice McKinney, Democrat, good morning.
Good morning, Jerry.
And Eric Nicholson, Green Party, good morning.
Good morning, Jerry.
And we're missing one. Emily Loeffler will be out of town. She's out of town this week. Our independent. Aren't you glad about that, Jim? I mean, this gives you a heads up.
It's always fun to debate her.
Yes, I know it is. Well, anyway, folks, thank you very much for being with us. Our telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 on the Verizon wireless system, absolutely free call on Verizon. Our lines are open, and we certainly invite you to participate in much of the debate that or discussion we have. You may not agree with what you hear, or you may agree with what you hear. At least we're communicating the issue. And number one issue on this morning has to do with what happened last weekend with the Women's March. 700,000 women came into Washington, D.C. last Sunday. Jim, don't worry about it.
I saw those pictures. There weren't 700,000 women. There.
Well, the lens can only pick up a certain number.
Yeah, because if they're not there.
Excuse me. Right now you're on the host line. 700,000 women downtown, and all of them had the same sign. Bush is not for us, and we're not for him. Jim Pomeli, you're the Republican. Explain.
Well, there were a lot of different issues. It was an interesting march. They actually changed the name of the march three times because they were trying to get people to come. And so they kept trying to expand the range of issues. And it basically became, it wasn't a march for women's rights. It was a march for everyone who was ticked off about anything anywhere in the country to come on out and complain. And that's why they kept changing the name of the rally.
I hope the ladies called Jim Pomeli. That's Jim Pomeli, the Republican speaking, ladies. Is that true?
Absolutely not, Jerry. This was a march for women's rights. We've got serious health issues that are being jeopardized by the current administration, and I think this was a show of solidarity among women, not just in the D.C. area, but women came from all over the country and all over the world.
From 60 countries.
There were nuns coming from South America to protest.
Nuns? They let the nuns out to join us?
There was a sister that came from South America protesting the way that we handle our NGO money in South America, which restricts what women can do with respect to their health. This is what showed up for this march.
Nicholas Sawalk?
Yes, Jerry.
comments about the women's march. Sound like the Metro Talk radio drama here.
He's just excited there were that many women
radio
in one
theater.
Place.
I think that it's kind of been, it's not a surprise that most of the people who were at this march, which was primarily focused on abortion rights, already didn't like George Bush. I mean, to say that they're carrying signs that say we don't like Bush is like carrying signs that say we're women. It's not a big surprise. There's not a lot of news there. I think Jim does make a good point that they did have to change the name of the march repeatedly and keep expanding it outward because it appears that just a march about abortion rights isn't enough these days to get a crowd. So it has to be about abortion rights and free health care and other, you know, pick an issue to get a larger and larger and larger constituency.
Eric, kind of clear us up here, because Ralph Nader is your man, and would Ralph Nader had liked, would he, you know, been desirous of being in a position where all these women are behind him, standing behind him, saying, right on, Ralph?
Sure. I think that, you know, Ralph has said in the past that he wants to help eliminate the conditions that, you know, cause people to want to have abortions with regards to poverty and lack of health insurance and unwanted pregnancies and that sort of thing. So I know Ralph takes a very strong pro-choice stance. I also agree with Nicholas to a certain degree that it's not real surprising that some of these people turned out. I mean, they've opposed most of the Bush presidency throughout its term. However, events like these can really be catalysts for increased political activism on the part of the folks who are involved, and can help spur their involvement in other ways, which could be useful for people who are politically aligned with those folks.
Nicholas? Yeah, but events like these can also be like the Million Mom March and have one big rally, and then everybody fizzles and people disappear, and the next time they try and hold a march, they get like 1,000 people. So it can be a catalyst for action, and some of the civil rights marches were, but the Million Mom March, for example, had one big rally, and then they just petered out.
I don't think women's health issues are going away. I don't think this is going to be a single march event. These are important issues.
When was the last one?
Yes, it was extended. The name of the march was extended, and the issues were extended, and that is because they're interrelated. Right. These are interrelated women's health issues. What? Abortion has a lot to do with what women can choose in terms of general health care.
But the whole thing here is timing, though. Here we're talking about the election year. We're talking about, 6 months away from when people really get serious about the elections in this country, and the women have come out, 600,000 people to show up on a Sunday in downtown Washington. That's a lot of folk.
Look, I mean, look at the Million Mom Marchers. I like to call it the 25,000 Mom March. And the organization that put that together collapsed within about a year.
Yeah, but so, why is this bashing against women marching?
I'm not bashing the women marching.
This is a congregation of a variety of women's groups. It wasn't a single group march.
It was every left-wing nut job group in the world.
These were a variety of women's groups that have been promoting health care for women and children for many years.
Right, and
our telephone number, folks, 301-230-0980, #980 on the Verizon wireless system here on Metro Talk. Our lines are open, absolutely free call on Verizon, and his name is Jim Pomeroy.
And just to speak to the topic at hand, I mean, again, what Jim and Nicholas are saying maybe is a weakness of the march in that it contained a diversity of different sort of interest organizations. You know, also is its strength in that these, like Patrice said, all these issues are interrelated, and that through common cause, these folks can come together and make their voices heard. In the case of the Million Mom March, it was simply around gun control issues, and that may not have been as strong a platform to sort of continue on.
And the timing, I go back to timing. Timing here is very critical for any march right now between now and November. 301-230-0980, #980 in the Verizon wireless system. Want to move on with the agenda. The agenda here of woman photojournalist fired. Why? Because the Pentagon objects to news agencies filming the bodies or coffins of military personnel being returned from Iraq to Delaware, Dover Air Force Base, where they come in. Is this a political move on behalf of the White House to cover up the number of Americans killed in post-war Iraq? We say post-war Iraq because we were told that the war was over a year ago yesterday, or day before yesterday. But the war was over, but we're still, again, an interesting picture in USA Today this week of the 134 U.S. troops killed in Iraq thus far, and the all of the news media now running these photo things in their front pages and everything else of the Americans killed in Iraq.
That was 1 month.
That was 1 month. Okay, right. Not 1 year. This was 1 month that 134 Americans killed. My dear friend, Mr. Eric Mickelson.
Jerry, you say all of the media are running this. As I understand it, actually, Sinclair Broadcasting decided not to air Nightline's reporting of the names and pictures of the soldiers who had died in Iraq so far, saying that it was, politically tasteless or something like that. I mean, on the grounds, basically, some sort of makeshift grounds that they had put forth.
But in every war we've had, I can't go back to World War II, but I know in Vietnam, certainly in other scrimmages that we've had around the world, they've always at least flashed a shot of the Americans that were brought in to Dover, Delaware, the coffins in honor.
In World War II in Vietnam, we actually had reporters on the battlefield, and we had shots of people actually dying.
Right.
And it's interesting to note that there's all this uproar about some pictures of some coffins draped in flags, which doesn't seem at all offensive to me. If nothing else, it's actually providing some honor to these men and women that we've sent over there on a war that maybe wasn't the best idea to die for something. And it really, the pictures themselves don't change how the country feels about a war. If the country's kind of ambivalent about the war in the first place, and the pictures are going to make people a little less happy about it, as they did in World War One and Vietnam. And if the country's behind the war, like in World War Two, you can show pictures all day, and it just makes people more determined to sacrifice for, you know, the cause that we're fighting for. So I think the fact that the administration is so dead set at putting names or faces to these men and women who are dying out there does say something about where this war is in the national conscience.
Let's get the audience in this. 301-230-0980, pound 980 of Verizon Wireless System. My question to you, my dear friends listening, is it bad? Is it, as one says, distasteful to photograph or to show the coffins as they come in to Dover Air Force Base in Dover, Delaware? Is this a bad thing for us and as Americans to see, or should there be privacy for the families and for those persons? Jim Pomeroy.
Well, yeah, there's a couple of different issues here. Let me start with getting back to Ted Koppel and his Nightline special. If he wanted to do that during Memorial Day, that's fine. That's understandable. He did it during sweeps. And that, I think, is offensive because he is using American death. He did it during sweeps. He didn't do it before sweeps.
So, come on.
He didn't do it after sweeps. He didn't do it on Memorial Day. He did it where he knew he could get controversy and he knew he could get high ratings.
What's wrong with that?
Well, okay, getting high ratings on the deaths of American soldiers.
But Jim,
and you're asking me about, you know.
No, the same thing with the president showing up.
The 9/11 commercials, Jim?
Right, there you go. 9/11 commercials, the same thing. The president puts in his commercials the same, help me out here, Eric.
Showing the destruction of the World Trade Center and why the president is fighting a war on terrorism.
No. Showing families.
Right, showing the families. And
right.
Showing
come
the,
on.
You know, distraught.
I think that the president's desire not to have these bodies shown to the American public is just a continuation of the policy that he started, the basis on which he started this war. He was poorly prepared. The servicemen were poorly prepared. We didn't know what we were getting into, and now he's bringing them back. He's not attending funerals. He's not showing bodies. The American public is not really informed as to what's going on. This is just a continuation of the irresponsible and disrespectful manner in which the president has handled this entire affair.
You've got your photos of caskets that you can wave around now. Isn't that enough? How many more photos of caskets do you want?
Yeah, but in past days, as I remember from Vietnam, every now and then it was just a way, like somebody said, it was a way of honoring the dead coming back from war. Nicholas, very quickly.
This is actually a continuation of the administration's policy towards anything they don't like, which is to stick their fingers in their ears and go, la, 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 I can't hear you. Just like they did as more and more intelligence came out saying there were no weapons of mass destruction from all of our allies. They kept saying, no, we're pretty sure. Yep, we definitely got some weapons there. La, 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 I can't hear you. So as bodies keep piling up, there's this la la la, everything's under control in Iraq, there's no problems there. Paul Bremer's got it all taken care of.
Because Nick would prefer to put his fingers in his ears and go la 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 as the terrorists around the world build up for another strike.
Our telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980, the Verizon Wireless System. Speak out, because this is the first Sunday political roundtable debate. Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian, Republican Jim Pomeroy, Democrat Patrice McKinney, and Eric Nicholson, Green Party, and Emily Leffler out of town now, independent, and Jim is very happy about that. 301-230-0980, pound 980 on Verizon. I have lines open. Don't let the fire die now. Speak out and let me hear what you have to say. Do you think that the American public has a right to see the coffins draped in the American flag coming into Dover Air Force Base? Is a big question, or any other political concerns you may have. Let's go to Stuart on the cell phone. Good morning, Stu.
Hey, Jerry. Good morning. First thing I want to say is, as you know, I ran for office as a Republican years ago. Yes, the public does have a right to see these photos. They were done in very good taste, and this is unfortunately even more an example of the pervasive censorship that this administration is trying to strangle the country with. You turn around and the media, you know, the Janet Jackson thing, just set off a firestorm of nothing. The average person in the public thinks it's nothing, and the president and the administration is just trying to censor everything, and I feel that this is a continuation of that.
Okay,
I'm
Stu,
let it go.
Stu, hold on the line, Stu. Let's put somebody else on the line with you, and I think I'd like to go to Susan and Rustin. Can I go to Susan and Rustin? Okay, what about Pat in Alexandria? Good morning, Pat.
Darling, how are you this morning?
Fine. Pat, meet the Stu on the line and,
hello,
and the rest of the gang here.
How
and
are
your,
you?
And your buddy is here.
Good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
How are you?
I'm very good.
I think you're exhibiting great self-restraint sitting next to or near Mr. Parmley. Extremely good self-restraint.
And that's a Republican.
We're right next to each other here in the studio.
Well, my comment on it is this, gentlemen. Mr. Parmley's comment about you have pictures to wave around shows me exactly how he feels about young men and young women who go off and do what their country wants.
Yeah, I'm offended the Democrats are exploiting them.
Excuse me, you're stepping on the caller's
line. We're good. What you're doing here, gentlemen, is ridiculous. Tell me now that you've got weapons of mass destruction. Tell me how many of those people Saddam Hussein put on the planes on 9/11. Don't be an idiot, Mr. Parmley. And as far as your comments about women, Christ, you make Ashcroft look good.
Wow. Welcome to the non-stickler hour.
Do we have the song Stand By Me?
Actually, Jerry, the reason I'm so ticked is my kid lives for Iraq June 19th.
Right.
I'm a little ticked. Mm-hmm. He's going to a place where there was no, absolutely no proof of terrorism operating. The only proof there was, again, Republican men have to prove they've got a bigger set than anybody around the world. And unfortunately, they're thinking with those instead of their brains. And yes, I'd like the pictures to be shown. Let Americans see what this is costing. And maybe they'll wake up and get the cowboy boots out of the White House.
Thank you very much, Pat.
Have a good day, darling.
Have a good day.
Look, let me tell you, what offends me is how the Democrats, and particularly not just the Democrats.
She's not a Democrat.
I'm not talking about her. I'm completely separate from her comments.
She says it every time she calls.
But she was getting all upset about saying that when I pointed out that the Democrats have their photos to wave, that I was somehow being insensitive. I actually am outraged over what the Democrats are doing. They don't, you know, they're out there waving casket photos, trying to get casket photos for political purposes. Their allies in the media are trying to get them for sweeps. They are the ones that are desecrating American, soldiers on this.
Yeah, but they didn't create a ban against having any pictures of any of the caskets coming back until they got to their final destination, and they didn't start a policy where the commander-in-chief of all of our forces doesn't attend the funerals because he doesn't want the publicity for the fact that people are dying. That's the Republican administration.
And let me tell you, if these reporters have a perfect right to go to the funerals and ask the families for permission to photograph, and my question is why, you know, if they want to do that, but they don't want to go to the families. They want to get a picture of as many bodies together as possible so they can use it for political purposes, and I think that's wrong.
Thank you very much, Jim. Will you do a station break so I can get to the other panel over here?
Why an administration policy against photographing the caskets coming in? If the administration
is so desperate to photograph them?
This is historically and traditionally the way that the Americans have honored their fallen soldiers in war. And why should we deny that? Why should we deny that to our current soldiers?
With that, let's go to Arlington and Daryl. Good morning, Daryl.
I'm a Republican, and I'm calling in because I'm offended in the comment that now you've got your pictures that you can wave around. I can't believe that that's a comment. Now he's trying to run away from his comment.
I stand by it 100%. I'm sick of people doing exactly that.
Jim, can I speak?
Right, go right ahead, Daryl.
Can I speak?
Yes, go right ahead, Daryl.
He's running away with the last caller that called in saying that it's the Democrats that are using it. He made the comment. He didn't need to make the comment the way he made it. He chose to make it the way he made it. If he was going to try to make the comment that Democrats are trying to use it for political gain, that's one thing. That's not what he said. He said, now you have the photos to flash around. He didn't have to say it that way. He said it in an inflammatory way for a reason. It's the same way they're viewing every comment that comes up. He said, put your fingers in your ears and say la, la, la for terrorists building up. The fight's not over that. The fight in Iraq wasn't over terrorism. He can make these glib comments all he wants. It makes us Republicans look bad. And when you use the caskets in a glib way like that, it makes us look bad.
Okay, Daryl, thank you very much. Let's go to Steve in Prince George's County. Good morning, Steve.
Yes.
Go right ahead.
Good morning. Yeah, I'm a very proud veteran, and I've served in combat, and I simply want to say that I think that the picture should be shown and let America decide which side of the aisle they will choose in November during elections. The part of the problem I do have with certain things that go on is the whole idea surrounding censorship. I think this is a censor issue. And we should simply have those pictures shown. They should not have been censored on any media venue, and simply allow America to decide how they feel about this war.
Okay, Steve, hold on the line. Don't leave me, okay?
Okay.
In Prince George's County, let's go from PG, Prince George, I have to say Prince George's, from Prince George's County, let's go over the hill to West Virginia. Jim's on the line. Jim, on the line with you, Steve, in Prince George's County. What's your opinion?
Yes, I have two opinions I'd like to voice. On this march that was held last Sunday,
mm-hmm.
the ladies,
mm-hmm.
I think the lady talked about abortion, the Democratic lady.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of choices made before conception is ever formed. And to say that abortion is right, would that lady like to have her arm pulled off? Or, you know, have, let's talk about partial birth abortion. I mean, that's brutal. If I did that to my dog in West Virginia, I'd be put in jail. And as far as bodies being seen in the TV and things like that, we did that in Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
And if you want to think about it, if we'd have went into Germany before Germany got as big as they did in the Second World War, maybe we wouldn't have lost as many people.
Huh. Okay, thank you very much, Jim. Steve, do you have an answer to that?
Again, I just think that sometimes the big government believes that they need to do our thinking for us. And I just have a whole issue with the whole censorship issue. The American public can make their own decision. They will decide which side of the aisle they'll go for. In fact, I actually agree with one of your panel members. I think they said that by showing those photos, if you are for the supporting the war and you're behind the presidency, this will galvanize your opinion. But if you're against it, you know, this will certainly polarize your opinion about things. So, again, it just should not be censored.
Thank you very much, Steve. Thank you, Jim, up in West Virginia. Have a good day, gents. And Francis in D.C., you got the word here now. Hello, Francis.
Hi. I have just a quick question. How is it that we broadcast this war all over the land? I couldn't even go to the to register my motor vehicle without seeing it all blasted all over there on TV. But we can show that. But yet it's wrong to show our poor guys being brought back. At least they're being brought back home. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you very much, Francis.
Sure. Bye.
Let's talk to Bill in Manassas while we got the line going. Hello, Bill.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us. Go right ahead.
Well, for one, the comment the lady just made, for the reporters to be over there showing the scenes of the soldiers, you know, in battle and getting hurt, and, you know, they're over there, they are reporting the war. The issue about the coffins being shown, it is a disrespect to the families of those individuals, because there's no names attached to those pictures. There's no names saying who's in those coffins. It's just showing the coffins. There's no respect, there's no honor being given those individuals in those coffins. If they had done it, you know, listed their names with the family's permission, or gone to the cemeteries and shown the grief of the families, then it would have been different. But they're not trying to show that people are dying. They're just out there to make the war look as bad as they can to try and get force President Bush to pull out. And I do support the war.
Okay,
I do
Bill.
Believe that.
Mm-hmm, okay. Go ahead, Bill.
I do believe we should have gone into there. I mean, Saddam Hussein has killed millions of people over the years, and nobody's ever said nothing about that. It seems like they forget about that, that the things that he did to his own people, all the torture and killing, and he needed to be taken out of power, and I think the war, going in there was the right thing to do.
Okay, Bill, hold your point, because Vadim is down in Springfield, Virginia, both in the state of Virginia. Let's get his opinion. Vadim, Bill's on the line along with the panel. Go right ahead.
Yeah, hi, I'm a Republican, and my take on this is that President Bush basically thinks the American people is stupid. He tried to lump in this whole Iraq thing with terrorism, knowing that he could get away with it because of the atmosphere after 9/11. There's been zero documentation that Iraq sponsored any or exported any terrorism, and there was no weapons of mass destruction. And basically, the American people, in his eyes, have no intelligence. We could just wrap everything up into terrorism and do whatever the hell we want all over the world, and we're going to get away with it because everyone's unhappy about what happened, and rightfully so.
Bill, do you agree with Vadim?
No, actually, I don't. I mean, I understand his point behind it. While the weapons have not been found, I could take a penny right today and toss it out into my front yard and have him sit there and watch it where it falls, and 9 times out of 10, he's not going to find that penny. That country
is... Is that because he's wearing sunglasses or he's blind and he's going to watch you throw the penny and he can't find it?
I actually tried that exercise with a couple of my coworkers, and they could not find it.
Okay. Hey, let me respond to that. You know,
very quickly.
I would buy that, except that Colin Powell stood up in front of the world and said, there they are. There's our satellite photos. Here it is, and here it is, and here it is. So what was all that about?
Thank you very much, Bill. Thank you very much, Vadim. Appreciate your input. We're talking here on our first Sunday Metro Talk, first Sunday political debate. And the question having to do with the coffins coming into Dover Air Force Base, usually in the wars they come in and there is some type of a presentation to the American public of those who've died, and there's a way the American public is honored. Now they're saying that this could be very disrespectful to families, although no one knows who's in the coffins. It could be empty coffins for all the American public might know, but they're there. Anyway, that's the debate this morning. We've had a lot of people calling in, and certainly, as you heard from Jim and Vadim this morning, opposite sides of the fence. Our panelists, as usual, on first Sunday, we have Eric Mickelson, Green Party, Patrice McKinney, Democrat, Republican Jim Pomeroy, and Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian. Let's go back and talk with Matt in D.C. Good morning, Matt.
Yeah, hey there. I absolutely think that we need to show the coffins coming in, with the caveat that, you know, we should get the family's permission. I think that's just an issue of basic respect. But the reason why it's so important is because when we fight wars these days, I think that this country is extremely desensitized to war. I'm a young person. I'm 25. I've got friends that are in Iraq. I have friends of friends who have died in Iraq. And I think that, you know, in the initial stage of the war, we saw pictures of these, you know, these smart bombs, these targets, and, you know, the U.S. kicking a lot of butt, you know, everywhere. And, you know, and I think that gets, you know, the American, you know, blood riled up. But we need to see what the real costs of war are. The real costs of war are that my peers are dying right now. And if America, you know, can't wake up to that, you know, if you, I mean, I happen to disagree with the war. If you agree with the war, you know, I mean, I'll respect that, and I'll talk with you. We'll have a conversation about that. But you need to understand the real impact that that's having on American lives and my peers. That's the reason I think that we need to show these things, because we need to really understand the true cost of this war. And I don't think most people in this country right now are. I think we're still, you know, believing that there's, you know, there's all this jingoism out there that's just contributing you know, more and more to people making rash decisions. And I don't want to see this happen again.
Okay, thank you very much, Matt. Eric?
Well, I certainly agree with Matt, but I also understand where Bill is coming from with regards to the feeling that some people feel like these photographs may disrespect the dead. But my question, I guess, would be, isn't that a relatively minor disrespect as opposed to the president sending these men and women off to die for his lies and his fabrications about weapons of mass destruction and the other supposed causes for going to this war?
Well, let's
I mean, the pictures really are... it seems to me just a drop in the bucket compared to...
Let's do a round robin. I'll go to Patrice McKinney, Democrat.
Well, absolutely. Not only that they went to war in support of lies, but that they were ill-prepared. There was no exit strategy. That the type of war that we were fighting is something completely new and different. And that in itself is a form of disrespect.
Republican Jim Pomeroy.
Well, let me come back to something I've talked about a couple times on this show. I think the Democrats have downgraded what a lie actually means. A lie is not being wrong. A lie is telling something you know to be true. Everyone believed the major intelligence services of the world, you know, the President of the United States, the Secretary of State, National Security Advisor, the CIA, even John Kerry, all believed that there were weapons of mass destruction. Bill Clinton believed that there were weapons of mass destruction. To say so and then find out that there was not what you thought was there, that is not a lie. That is being wrong, granted, but it is not a lie, and we need to stop trying to call it that.
Nicholas Sawalk, libertarian.
My gosh.
Now we move on. No, I'm sorry.
I don't know. I think that you know, it is, how can we send young men and women over to die and then say it's disrespectful to show pictures and make it real to the American people that there are young men and women dying? I think that the real disrespect is in pretending that there aren't horrible, terrible losses of life on both sides, I should add. I think that we get kind of wrapped up in this illusion that it only matters when American men and women die, and that anyone who dies on the other side in a war, well, they deserved it because obviously we needed to go kill them. But, you know, it's not right and it's not good to have anyone get their leg blown off or be shot and killed or to have little orphans running around. War isn't pretty on either side, and even if we had no American casualties, I mean, what exactly are we doing in Iraq? We're saving people from themselves. We have a resistance movement inside the country. You know, we're saying, we want to give this country back to you guys, and they're saying, well, we want to take it from you, and we're saying, no, you can't take it from us. We can give it to you once we put in our government. And it just... I don't like to see
that. Let's go to Marlboro and Jeremy go on the line. Good morning, Jeremy.
Good morning. I just let me preface this by saying that I am active duty Army, and I was one of the first units across the border in the war. I think that this discussion should be more about accountability. The reason we crossed the border was to take down Saddam Hussein because he's a bad person. We were to hold him accountable for his actions. By the same token, I think it's appropriate that we show these pictures of my brothers and sisters in arms who've given their lives for freedom around the globe to hold President Bush accountable. He sent these young men and women over there to accomplish a mission. I think that it's not disrespectful, considering there are several unidentified dead Americans, to not identify the coffins. I think that we need to offer this respect to our soldiers.
Okay, thank you very much, Jeremy. Moving along on the agenda, folks, if you're just joining us, this is Metro Talk from Big 100, Sports Talk 980, Clear Channel Radio in Washington. I'm Jerry Phillips. And with me, of course, Eric Mickelson, Green Party, Democrat Patrice McKinney, Republican Jim Pomeli, and Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian, on our first Sunday political debate. Every first Sunday we do have this little discussion, and if you'd like to join us, you can certainly join us. It's always good that we can agree or disagree, but the fact is that we're communicating. 301-230-0980, #980 on the Verizon wireless system. My dear friends, let's move along on the agenda, and the agenda has to do with Virginia, the Virginia Assembly budget. Why does the Virginia GOP, well, the question is, did they get soft on the governor's budget proposals? It seems as though the fight started almost 2 months ago with Governor Warner wanting to raise taxes for some special programs. At that time, the GOP, which dominates much of the Virginia Assembly, said, no tax increases. We're not going to have that. We can shift monies around and find another end to this means. Meanwhile, the priorities of projects in Virginia seem to grow, such as transportation, education, health care. Those are three top priorities really affecting Northern Virginia. And now we find that the budget has been passed when they almost stopped the state from being able to spend money. Now the budget has been passed. And who won out? The Democrat in a very large GOP General Assembly. Governor Warner got his tax increases. The GOP said, well, we'll wag our tails and go along with the governor on this one. This morning in the news, as I wrote in the news copy at 8 o'clock, it is now, we are finding out now that, I got to find my place here, according to this morning's Washington Post, this week's fallout from the Virginia budget ordeal will provide little money for transportation projects in Northern Virginia. the biggest cry that people have when it comes to priorities in Virginia. Jim Pomeroy, you are a Virginian. Talk to us about it. What's going down?
Oh, there's just so much. I mean, I think Governor Warner did win a victory. Now, the question is, what sort of victory? He won a victory for tax and spend liberalism. He increased the state budget by 15%, and he really took advantage of Northern Virginia. They have really socked it to Northern Virginia. We're going to be paying more in car taxes than anybody else in the
car
state.
Car taxes.
We're
going to
get cuts
what,
in our...
Wasn't it Governor Gilmore that...
Yes, Governor Gilmore tried to get rid of the car tax, and Governor Warner is putting it back.
I'm a little confused. When did Governor Gilmore try to get rid of the car tax?
When he almost bankrupted the state by doing it, Jerry.
Let me back up. Governor Gilmore is one of the few Virginia politicians that actually kept his promises. He promised in his campaign a 5-year repeal of the car tax up to $20,000 a year per car. And he did that. When he left office, that was in place. That was in place. Word for word. And the legislature and Governor Warner have repealed that. So Governor Gilmore kept his promise. God
bless
him.
We have blessings on this show. Go right ahead, Eric.
I'm from Maryland, so I don't follow the Virginia legislature as closely as I follow the Maryland legislature.
You can't talk because Ehrlich and Annapolis don't.
We can get to that some other time. But you know, it's good to see that that sort of the anti-tax orthodoxy seems to be broken in Virginia, and maybe a little bit of reality has seeped into these people's sense of. Well-being. You know, the issue of promising the full repeal of the car tax is like promising, you know, free gumdrops and lollipops for everybody or whatever. It's like, you know, fine, get rid of the taxes, but how are you going to pay for the services that everybody demands?
Transportation will get less money. I got to go to Nicholas. I'm coming to Patrice. But, Nicholas, I got to come to you on that. That is a big cry. We have the Wilson Bridge, the mixing bowl. We also have I-66, right?
Well, there's all sorts of things that need spending, which Governor Warner will not. I'm sorry, that need transportation.
I didn't ask you to go on a spin. I was just trying to ask you about I-66. I just wanted you to tell me I was right. Right. Okay.
You're always right.
Because I have the buttons. Those are the transportation projects that people are crying over, and the gridlock gets worse. What about this, Nicholas? Nicholas.
I think that the real problem is. I mean, the first problem is that the Republicans basically rolled over and showed once again that it doesn't matter whether you're called a Republican or a Democrat when it comes to taxing people, you're for it because more money pulled into the public coffers means more things that you can divvy out to your voters so they'll keep voting for you. You can give them some. The real issue is that there is a big budget in Virginia and there is a lot of spending that goes on in the Virginia budget. And it's been increasing hand over fist for the last 10 years. The amount of money that's being spent during the IT bubble was obscene. And rather than come into a budgetary recession and go, wow, we need to cut back on some stuff. Maybe we spent a little too fast. Maybe we should trade in our big Range Rover SUV for maybe a smaller domestic SUV. The Virginia General Assembly said, nope, can't cut anything. Not allowed. We got to raise some taxes. We can't be honest with the people of Virginia and say, look, we spend too much money. We're spending too much money. We can't afford it. We need to maybe cut back on
the question here, Patrice. I'm coming to you. I know you have a thought on this, but I got to also tag this to your thought. Does this make Governor Warner a good prospect for national politics now? I mean, here, a Democratic governor in the state of Virginia, the Old Dominion, against a GOP solid block assembly, won over. What does it do for Governor Warner?
Well, he certainly showed that he had very excellent political skills in this situation. He was able to get a Republican, House of Delegates to pass, finally, respectable revenue budget.
Tax increase.
Exactly. And also it represents the fact that Governor Warner was able to get the state of Virginia to take responsibility for what is requiring its jurisdictions to do. What we have is a situation where we have state mandates for education, transportation, health care, services to the mentally ill and mentally disabled. State has not funded those. Those are unfunded mandates. They're pushing the responsibility down to the jurisdictions. But in Virginia, jurisdictions do not have the authority to tax or raise revenue in any way other than real property taxes.
Oh, yes,
so
they do.
Absolutely not.
Yes, they do.
What do they have?
They tax our cell phones. They tax our landlines. Many of them have meals taxes. There's all sorts
cigarettes.
Of additional cigarettes, and it varies from locality
minor
to locality.
Fees, but there's nothing.
Nothing
substantial enough to fund unfunded educational mandates that are sent down by the state.
Okay. Last word, Eric.
Well, I just think to get back to an earlier point you made, it's interesting to see that Warner is having success here, where Ehrlich, in basically the opposite situation, has been stonewalled effectively by the Democratic
Party. It's an interesting play throughout the region. If you look in Maryland at the Republican governor, not as successful with the Democratic as General Assembly, but vice versa in, what is it, in Virginia, where you have a Republican General Assembly, and they're bowing to the Democratic governor. Let's move on, guys, because we have a few minutes left. Our telephone number 301-230-0980, #980, the Verizon Wireless System. We have lines open if you'd like to talk on any of our issues that we've discussed this morning with our political debate panelists, Nicholas Hallwalk, Jim Pomeli, Patrice McKinney, and Eric Mickelson. Definitely give us a call before we get all out of here. 301-230-0980, #980 on Verizon. Let's. I had another local story. We're going to talk about Mayor Anthony Williams and that whole thing about the schools, his control. Let's do that very quickly in about 45 seconds. Should the mayor lost, the council voted against his taking full control of the schools. Is this a big defeat for Mayor Anthony Williams, Eric Mickelson?
Well, as I understand
it. Yes or no?
No, but there could be a chance to sort of amend the legislation and go back to the council.
Patrice McKinney?
Appears to be a defeat for the mayor.
Big defeat.
Somebody should take control of the schools in D.C. I have no idea if it's a debate.
I didn't ask
somebody
that.
Should take control
of
those schools.
You ask a Republican about apples, and they'll tell you about oranges every time. Let me talk to my libertarian friend.
It was a defeat for the mayor, but it was a victory for the representative, or having representative government in D.C.
Okay. Big question here, folks. The Vatican says that, in fact, it was out of the American bishops, Cardinal McCarrick here in Washington, D.C., who wants to lead a group of bishops now to question those Democratic or those Catholic candidates running for office who don't necessarily agree with the teachings of the church. They want to question and find out about them. It is a known fact that the Archbishop of Detroit said in a statement he would deny communion to John Kerry if he had attended one of his churches on Easter Sunday. John Kerry attended a Catholic church in Massachusetts. Now, John Kerry, also the Democratic candidate, is very much in favor of abortion and birth control and all of the things that go against the teaching. Anyway, the question here is, is John Kerry and other Democratic candidates or any other candidates stepping on the toes of the Vatican? And what should Catholic candidates do? Give up running for office?
Well, I think it's interesting discussion, and I can't help but go back to the days of President Kennedy where he said that he's not going to be a mouthpiece for the Catholic Church. I think it's unfair for the Church to expect our politicians in the United States to be a mouthpiece for the Catholic Church, because we clearly have a culture of separation of church and state. It's a little bit different from what exists in other countries.
Well put. Let's go to Peter in Springfield. Good morning, Peter.
Yes, good morning. Hi. I believe that Senator Kerry, I mean, it's difficult to start judging about whether he can go to communion or not. Divorce is not a good thing in the church, the Catholic Church. But I do believe for him to be denied communion, that kind of hurts. It hurts a lot to see someone not be able to go up to the altar and receive a sacrament. So.
And especially when Catholics believe that is Jesus, that you're going to deny Jesus. Well, Bishop Gregory, the president of the U.S. Conference of Bishops, has said that would be a last result just because over abortion. So I give some light to that. Okay.
Okay. It's hard to. It's a big. It's a very controversial moral issue.
Right.
So, but definitely that's a...
But no one should be denied a communion because...
Well, I don't think so, because he's
personal
beliefs. Just trying to, you know, go up there and, you know, he's in church and he's...
That's his personal thing.
Right.
His personal right.
That's his right.
Jim Paul?
I'm Presbyterian, but let me stand up for the Catholic Church here. If you have rules about communion... and folks break those rules about communion. It's certainly
that
the right
the rule
of the
communion.
Church. Well, I'm not, again, I'm Presbyterian, so I'm going right. to defer to you on that. But if the Catholic Church decides that somebody is not eligible for communion, they have every right to do what they want with
their
communion.
Yeah, but
there's
a lot of controversy in the Catholic Church today. Maybe we should do a show on this when some of our good Catholic buddies come in. But there's a lot of controversy over can you deny a person because they disagree with teachings of the church, dogmatic or not.
It's not just disagreement. It's disagreement if I'm a Catholic and I feel that abortion rights are important and, you know, I feel that way. And maybe I vote that way. That's disagreement. When I'm a candidate running for national office, getting up on the stump going, abortion rights will not be denied, that's a little bit different than just disagreeing with the Catholic Church.
Okay, Frank on the cell phone. Frank, you got 10 seconds.
I want to speak on the broader topic of censorship that's come up a couple of times this morning.
Okay, I've got about 20 seconds. Go ahead.
And I guess the last bastion of censorship to me is the pictures of aborted fetuses, and it's a very uncomfortable topic. However, we've been talking about showing the coffins this morning, which I support. I saw the march last week, which certainly, you know, 500,000 people got out and expressed their opinions. Certainly support that, but nowhere do we see a picture that shows the results of what they support. And it's a self-imposed censorship that we have in the media today that I'm very uncomfortable with, and I'm just not sure how we can justify something that has happened millions of times in the year 2004, and we think it's somehow
interesting
wrong to show that picture.
Okay, thank you very much, Frank.
I'll get off.
I wish I could give you more time, but our time is running out. Thank you very much. I'm going to let Frank have the last word in so many ways because I think he kind of put it in a capsule form from his opinion. Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jerry.
See you next month. Jim Parmalee, Republican.
Thank you.
And take your boxing gloves off. Patrice McKinney, Democrat, thank you very much.
Thanks, Jerry.
Yeah, John Kerry, okay. Eric Mickelson, Green Party.
Thanks, Jerry.
Data, huh? Consumer in the White House. Thank you very much, everybody, for being with us. Certainly, we got to get out of here. I want to thank you, my friends, for listening. Join us next Sunday at the same time. Mother's Day next Sunday. Don't forget Mom. After all, she is the gateway to the world. She brought us all here. Until that time, I want to thank those who helped to put it together this morning. Certainly, Steve Solomon, our technical producer, public affairs administrative producer, Carolina Restrepo, Shaheen, our public affairs assistant, written and produced by yours truly, Jerry Phillips. Metro Talk is a WBIG WTEM public affairs presentation from Clear Channel Radio in Washington, D.C. My friend, get out and enjoy yourself. Enjoy life. Take care of each other. Until next time, much peace, much love.